The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast, your Seattle Seahawks podcast by 12s for 12s, with your hosts, Adam Emmert.
I'm so happy for the rain that the rain is better at life than Skip Bayless. Thank you, rain.
And Brandon Schultz.
They play the music too loud. It's like you can't even talk to the person next to you.
Go Hawks.
This is the Seahawkers Podcast, your Seattle Seahawks podcast by 12s for 12s. I'm Brandon Schultz. And
oh, thank you, Brandon. It's good to be here. Thank you. I appreciate you bringing me in on the show here.
Catfish!
You got me on the intro hard count, and I jumped right off sides there. I'm sorry.
Sorry. The intro hard count, Adam. Adam knew the intro hard count.
Call
was
me
coming
Mike Bennett
this week. Adam Emmert, everybody.
Yeah,
he knew the hard count was coming this week, and even though he studied up on my hard count, still jumping off sides.
Practice for it all week, and I couldn't even help myself. I was just so excited to get to everything about this game.
Well, I'm a little bit flustered, but this is episode 88, where we can guarantee we'll target Jimmy Graham more than Russell Wilson. I'm Brandon Schultz, and the aforementioned Adam Emmert.
All right, man. Way to rally around that. I knew that was going to throw you off there a little bit, but I couldn't help it, man. I had to go for it.
We're going to talk about that, though. That's going to come up. There's a lot of frustrating points from this last game, and I think part of it, Adam, has a lot to do with the fact that I really wanted the Seahawks to win this game. I really, really wanted it.
Yeah, we all kind of did. We knew this was a big game and something that could, down the line, really help dictate who ends up with home field advantage in the playoffs, because we'll be in the playoffs. We know that's going to happen. But this is you know, it's not a great loss, but it's not the worst loss ever. You know, I thought we were going to have to come on here and really do the, oh, don't panic thing and all that, but honestly, for most of the comments that I'm seeing from you guys, whether that was on the Facebook page or your emails, which we'll get to later in the show, really, I think you're all on the same page as we are where, look, yes, started out 0-2, couple tough road games to start out the season, but the sky's not falling. Everything's just
fine. If anything, about when it comes to panicking, Adam, people are panicking about making sure that nobody panics. That's what it seems like.
Yeah, almost. It almost feels that way, man. Just everybody, you just coming out right away and be like, no, don't panic.
Don't panic.
Why are you panicked about not being panicked? I'm not panicked about not being panicked, you know? But yeah, so that was actually encouraging to see out of the fan base, because really you'll see a lot of other fan bases that would really just lose their minds in this sort of situation. Now, the other thing is that I'm glad we're in the position we're in compared to a lot of other teams in the league right now when you kind of look around. And even some of those teams even have a better record than 0-2.
Yeah, and I want to talk about some of those other teams. I also want to, well, some of those teams are 2-0, and I wouldn't want to be them.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to talk about that. I want to talk about play calling versus Russell Wilson decision making, because there's been, again, whenever you lose, it's a lot of folks look toward the play calling. And I want to have a little bit of a discussion on whether or not it's easy to decide between whether or not it's the play call or just the play execution. Want to talk Michael Bennett, as we started off the show talking about, and of course, Jimmy Graham, and just kind of what kind of identity this team is going to settle into. Because in the past, this has definitely been a running team. We kind of wondered about if that was going to continue this year with Jimmy Graham. We talked about our offense expectations early on a few shows back. And we'll get into that, as well as a preview of the upcoming game against the Bears. So a lot of places to go.
Betcha.
Where should we start?
A lot of places
Where
to
should
go.
We start? How about we start about who we're glad we're not? be glad that you're a Seahawks fan.
That's true. That's true. It could be worse. You could be a Colts fan.
Oh, you don't want to be a
Colts
fan.
You could be an Eagles fan.
You don't want to be an Eagles fan.
You could be a Cowboys
fan. Even 2-0, you don't want to be a Cowboys fan.
Not right now.
One of the things you mentioned, Adam, was the fact that you believe the Seahawks will be in the playoffs. And, you know, watching the Cowboys, I would almost say the Seahawks will be in the playoffs barring injuries. Bad injuries, like losing your starting quarterback and your top wide receiver, like the Cowboys have with Dez Bryant going out and then Tony Romo going out this last weekend.
Look, injuries are the caveat to every one of those statements all season long, all the time, because it's if healthy, right? That's always the caveat. But the thing is the way the Hawks are built, they're not built as an aging team around aging stars. Look at the guys that went down. I mean, we're talking Romo. He's what, 35?
He's
34.
He's in his
mid-30s. Late 30s. Drew Brees is hurting right now again in his late 30s. Peyton Manning can't throw it through a wet paper bag right now.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad I'm not the Broncos too.
That's another team that I would say, because even talking to Jared, and we'll get it in the pick show, he feels darn lucky that they are 2-0 at this point and really winning despite Peyton rather than because of him. So I think there's a lot of other teams out there who maybe even have a better record, but have more inherent base problems, like things that are just not fixable. You can't just come in and magically heal Tony Romo's collarbone. Yeah. You're going to be without him for 8 weeks. And same with Dez. These are things that you can't help. The things that the Seahawks can do are very correctable, because I look back at this last game, Brandon, and I know everybody's saying, oh, offensive line was bad. No, we didn't get it to Jimmy Graham enough. And what's up with the pass rush and blah, 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 blah. And I looked at all that stuff. And honestly, I think the number one product of this game, the one thing that contributed the most to this loss, was Seahawks penalties. And we've talked about that ad nauseum over seasons past, but this was another poor performance penalty-wise, and they were the timing of these penalties were really poor and really hurt the Hawks in the long run. And honestly, you can attribute the Packers' first 16 points almost purely to penalties on us.
Right. No, it did put the Seahawks in a deficit early. Now, one thing that we talked about, Adam, is that Green Bay crowd was so fired up. Those players seemed so fired up. And after the Seahawks got through that initial emotional burst from the fans and the opposing team, they weren't that far out of it. And you did see it that they were able to climb back into it in the third quarter and go up 17-13. And at that point in the game, it looked like they were in control.
It really did. It felt like the offense had really found itself and was moving the ball with some consistency. The one thing about the offense with everybody, I don't understand how everybody is saying this offense is struggling so mightily over these first two games. I think there's way too much negativity about the offense. I look back at this last game, 1-3 and out the entire game. One. That was on the first drive. And if you want to point towards play calling as being a problem for this offense right now, I would say first drive, yeah, play calling stunk. First play of the game, bubble screen. That's how they haven't worked for 2 years for any team. Just stop it. And then two runs to the left-hand side with Marshawn Lynch, which we saw the previous opponent for the Packers, the Bears, have great success running to that left side. So that's where they tried to go with the ball, but you could see the Packers were really keyed in on Marshawn. You're right about trying to withstand that early energy. It's a lot like an NBA game where the home team just comes out so fired up and will just play with so much energy that you just got to kind of weather that storm. And then once you get past there, then the playing field evens. And you saw the Hawks really offensively have their way, and defensively, as long as they weren't committing a stupid penalty, stopping the Packers.
I guess I didn't necessarily have a problem with any calls in particular. Or when I think about the offense struggling, Adam, I think about the fact that they could not run the ball early. And the problem I have with that is, you watch what the Bears did to the Packers. Now, you could argue that defense was just so fired up in that first and second quarter that they were keying in on Marshawn Lynch, and Wilson wasn't just taking it and running it. But the problem I have is that you have an offensive line that Tom Cable has built for running the ball, and even taking offensive linemen that are are known to be better run blockers than pass blockers because that's the identity of the team that you want to have. And when Marshawn Lynch, for throughout the game, rushes 15 times and only gets 41 yards, that's a problem for this team.
It can be, but we talk about it all the time, right? Where going into the season about expectations for the offense, Jimmy Graham will stretch the field and that'll open everything up for Marshawn, and then Marshawn will have a better game. Well, it works vice versa too. Everybody keys in on Marshawn and then the passing game is able to go off. You're right about the run blocking not being stellar. There weren't a lot of just whiffs by the offensive line, but they weren't getting a great push. And Marshawn would get basically to the line and there'd be a guy in the hole, or just the defensive line of the Packers really played pretty stiff, especially B.J. Raji. I mean, he had a whale of a game, probably the best game he's had.
He probably
years,
heard you call
honest.
Him that a replacement level player listening to the show, Adam.
Yeah, that might be the problem at the end of the day. But yeah, they really didn't run the ball worth a lick at all, except for with Russell. And you talk about play calling and people being up in arms about play calling. Well, okay, let's be critical of Darrell Bevell when we should be, and then let's give him credit when we should be. What did the Seahawks do after they realized that defensive end, while not crashing down on Marshawn Lynch every play, was basically just holding his ground there and not paying attention to Russell and really keying in on Marshawn?
Yeah, the appearance is that that defensive end stayed home.
Mm-hmm.
The defensive end was just giving that appearance just enough to make Russell Wilson hand the ball off with no real almost knowing that Russell wasn't going to challenge him on that on those runs in that first half.
Right. And once you saw that Darrell Bevell recognized this, how'd the offense change? They started letting Russell run around, and they started throwing the ball a heck of a lot more. And as much as the offensive line struggled in run protection, the pass protection was pretty darn good this game.
That's where I was more impressed with was the pass protection than the run blocking. If you build a team to be good at run blocking, though, I feel like it should show mm-hmm. up. And to me, the pass blocking showed up. I saw the pocket thingy multiple times in this game, Adam, and it was beautiful.
Yes.
And Russell delivered the ball on several occasions. You know, one play in particular was that touchdown pass to Doug Baldwin.
Russell out of the shotgun, three receivers far side, takes a snap, four-man rush. Russell has time, fires in the end zone, touchdown, Seahawks! Doug Baldwin in the back corner of the end zone, a beautiful dart, 13 yards. The Seahawks go on top of the Green Bay Packers, 16-13.
And that was a heck of a route by Baldwin. I mean, really putting his foot in the ground and making a great cut inside. And that was a cool play. But like you said, you give Russ time and he'll carve you up. And he really was on point in this game. I felt like he was better this game than he was against the Rams as far as throwing the ball overall. His accuracy was better. His confidence was better. And here's the thing. Sure, everybody's PO'd about how much Jimmy Graham got the ball in this game. Well, was the passing game not effective? See, that's the thing is, do you want Russell to throw it to Jimmy Graham every time because we made that trade and he's a big time player just because he's Jimmy Graham? Or do you want Russell to throw the ball to the open guy, which is what they did, 2-for-2 in the red zone in this game? And really, Jimmy Graham was being covered up, safety help a lot. And you saw Russell move the ball around and was very effective at it. Kept the offense on schedule as long as they didn't commit a penalty like Okung with a false start early in the game and setting that drive back. Or Sweezy having a personal foul the next drive that sets you back 15 yards and takes you out of field goal range. Those were the things that were the problem, not how many times we were targeting Jimmy Graham. They want to focus on Jimmy and they want to focus on Marshawn. Then that's exactly what you do. You go with Russell and all the other weapons. And that's what they did. And it was effective.
Yeah, and I would argue there were some times where it looked like Graham was being targeted and Wilson did go to other places. But I think you make a good point about that touchdown pass to Fred Jackson, the 5-yard touchdown pass. That looked like a play that was designed for Graham. And mm-hmm. Where Graham would be the first read, and depending on how the defense reacted, they were keyed in mm-hmm. on Jimmy Graham, which allowed Russell Wilson to just dump it off right there to Fred Jackson for the touchdown.
And the key there, for the touchdown.
The shotgun snap to Russell on third down. Go down the middle, Fred Jackson. He's got it. Touchdown, Seahawks. Looking off, then back to the middle. He finds the newly acquired Fred Jackson right in the middle of the field. And a dart from Russell Wilson to Fred. And just like that, the Seahawks are back in the game from 5 yards out.
Look, I don't give a crap who's scoring as long as we're scoring. And that's what I think is weird about this Jimmy Graham discussion to a degree, is that people just want to see Jimmy catch passes because he's Jimmy, rather than, well, is that the smart play at the time? And I don't think that the Seahawks are purposely avoiding Jimmy Graham or don't understand that he's a great talent, but they do understand if the other team is going to key in on him as being your one and only great receiver, then you get to spread the ball around to the other guys. And it's just what Russell did. He had a fine game, finished with a 91 quarterback rating. Would have been a lot higher if not for really a fluky interception that he threw there. And I just don't see the hand-wringing over the passing game. Now, the running game, sure. But if I were to see this team struggle out of the gate early, if it struggled in the run game rather than the pass game, I'd feel a little better about that, only because I know Tom Cable can coach up that side of the ball. The passing game has been the problem over the course of the years. So he can coach up the run side of the ball. It will get better, and it will get better against the Bears. No doubt about that.
One thing I want to ask you about, Adam, is that one thing that struck me about Russell Wilson that maybe doesn't strike me about some of the other quarterbacks in the league, he seems to do a pretty good job of spreading it around as quarterback to all the different receivers, getting them involved. But I wonder if he almost tries too hard to spread it around, I'm worried that he's bypassing the reason why you get a player like Graham is because he is a really good receiver. And yes, there may be moments where he's matched up one-on-one and you have another guy who, you know, he might also have a one-on-one matchup, but would you rather go to a guy like Graham on a one-on-one matchup versus a guy like
Luke Wilson?
That brings up a really good play. That one play where Luke Wilson made a great catch on the one play, but there was another play too
earlier in the game,
where Graham was kind of, it was almost like a pick route on the left side, and Luke Wilson falls down with Clay Matthews falling over the top of him, you know, trying to go for the pick after he fell down. There was no reason to go to Wilson in that particular situation.
No, I guess not. It's tough. It's tough from the TV copy to really be able to see what all the different receivers are doing and how that relates to where Russell is in his drop back and through his progressions and all of those things.
He's feeling from a particular side of the line. It's hard to judge that from the all 22 camera view.
Yeah. And I wish I had that view. I wish I had the coach's tape, because I think I would be a smarter football fan as a result.
I wish I had the quarterback inside the helmet cam like you can do on Madden.
Oh yeah. That'd be pretty killer. I'm surprised that hasn't happened yet, to be honest, but there have been some improvements in camera technology in the NFL, and we'll get to that at my Better at Life this week. So,
a good tease there.
I could see a helmet cam coming. That'd be pretty sweet, because you always wonder, what in the world was he looking at?
Right.
You know?
But the other thing I was going to talk about was, you see Russell Wilson enters interviews, and he always has to, if he's asked about Jimmy Graham, if he's asked about Doug Baldwin, he has to mention every single other receiver on the offense, all the way down to receiver number 6. And I don't necessarily see that from some of the other guys. Now, some of the other quarterbacks, yes, they're, you know, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, they're really good at spreading the ball around. You saw Ty Montgomery get the ball several occasions in the passing game. But that whole mentality of Russell Wilson having to call out every single player, it makes me wonder if he also is that aware of making sure to get every single player involved throughout and maybe at a detriment.
Do you think, like, you know, in Snow White, when they can rattle off all 7 dwarfs, like, really quick, you know, like Sneezy, Sleepy, you know, Grumpy, blah, 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 and like they do that. When Russell jumps or drops back to pass, that's what's going through his head. Baldwin curse Graham, you know, like he's just going to try to get it to each one of them every time. I don't know. I don't think that it carries over to the field at all. Now, yeah, he does make sure to be overly gracious about including everybody in every interview. And it's part of the Russell Wilsonisms. It's part of his cliche stuff. I mean, the field's 100 yards long and 53 and a third wide. And, you know, there's, you know, no rest or no time to sleep. And Yeah, exactly. And so it's just, and there's separations and preparation. I mean, we've heard them all, right? And I think just naming off all the receivers or all the linemen or anything like that, really, that's just, it's habit anymore. But I don't think it carries over on the field. Now, one thing on the field, though, was about the offensive line. It was just, I felt like it was Nowak who struggled the most. I feel like he had a pretty poor game. Britt played so-so. Okun was solid. Sweezy was solid. Gilliam was solid. But yeah, Nowak, that was probably, for me, the biggest disappointment.
Well,
there.
If you look at the Pro Football Focus numbers, and sometimes those match the eye test, sometimes they don't, but Okun graded out highly, so what you would expect.
Okay.
Gilliam, yep. In the pass, he and Okun in the pass blocking graded out positively. Everywhere mm-hmm. else, Nowak in the pass game, he was, you know, average. Britt and Sweezy, not so great in the pass game. But then Nowak and Gilliam really in the run game, and Britt to a certain extent too, are kind of the guys that graded out negatively in the run game. So it kind of matches the eye test, I think.
Yeah, Britt and Nowak were the guys that stood out to me in the run game.
Yeah.
Because I saw the Bears have a lot of success running that direction against this Packers team. I don't understand how those guys aren't able to get it done in that situation.
I think Nowak going up against B.J. Raji, it's a different... The Rams play a different kind of defense than the Packers. You know, the Rams have the 4-3 defense, and and most of the time you don't have a guy lining up right on top of you in the 4-3 style defense if you're Drew Nowak. Whereas if you're going against a 3-4 defense, you're lining up right against B.J. Raji. So kind of a new deal for Nowak, so maybe I give him a little bit of a pass in that situation. Early on in the season.
Game two, you know, they are looking to build some chemistry. It's gonna take a little bit of time. But I thought overall the offense had moments of good rhythm. Like I said, only 1-3 and out the entire game. I think that's a huge positive. And I feel like that's gonna be just fine. I'm not worried about the offense really. Now, let's talk a little bit about defense, because this was a game that the defense didn't play horribly, but man, they just sure beat themselves, whether it was on the first drive of the game for the Packers, where they get called for the 12 men on the field, and that extends that drive. They had them stopped on third down, and that results in 7 points. Or the next drive by the Packers, which is aided by the fact that the Seahawks on their possession prior to that get the ball in Tyler Lockett's hands. He takes it to the 20. There's a hold. Now they're backed up to the 10.
Right.
And then you go 3 and out, and you punt it to the Packers at basically midfield. Now the Packers only have 10 yards to go to get in the field goal range, which is basically all they did. So there's 10 points out of the gate right there that are given up because of penalties. And it's just very frustrating. Then you look at the end of the half, 40 seconds to go, it's 2nd and 17, and Bennett jumps off sides, which lets Aaron Rodgers go ahead and just wing one downfield without a care in the world. And the reason you do it is because you don't know what could happen. Something good could possibly happen and nothing bad, because the penalty's already been called on the defensive linemen. Rodgers chucks it up, and Sherman and Thomas get called for the pass interference there, and that takes them right down the field and sets them up for another field goal going in half. That's 13 points right there. Right there. That's just off of your dumb penalties. And otherwise, I felt like they stopped the run fairly decent. I know the Packers still had over 100 yards rushing, even without Eddie Lacy, and Starks looked good in stretches, but I think that they did. I didn't feel like we're getting gashed there.
No, I mean, Starks had the one big 35-yard run. He was 20 attempts for 95 yards. Aaron Rodgers, you know, he's going to get some rushing yards just the way he moves around and as he's healthy. He's that kind of quarterback who he's a little bit sneaky in how mobile he is. And he worked the pocket really well. He was really, you know, moving around and avoiding pressure. And he was the MVP. And you can't be mad about that, because that's who he is.
Yeah, he did some Aaron Rodgers things, right? I mean, the touchdown pass to James Jones with Sherman in coverage, that was a thing of beauty. Running to his left, kind of takes Earl with him for that safety help, and then just comes back the other way and rips one. You know, that was a heck
of
a throw.
On another false or another offside on that throw.
That's exactly it. So he's able to take these kind of gambles. And so even though the penalty is not enforced and it still shows up on the stat sheet that we only had six penalties and the Packers only had six penalties, there were a lot of penalties that were called that weren't accepted that allowed Aaron Rodgers to be a little bit more aggressive. Now, you mentioned him moving around quite a bit. How did you feel about the Hawks' pass rush throughout the game?
Well, I thought that Cliff Avril, you know, despite that mistake early on where he should have just taken a knee rather than tried to get out of bounds, I thought Cliff Avril was really the star of the defensive line. 9 quarterback hurries from his side. I thought Michael Bennett, apart from the offsides, was pretty good at getting a pass rush. He was effective. Ataba Rubin too. I was impressed with him. You saw him chasing around Aaron Rodgers a lot. And that was something we didn't see a whole lot of Rubin in the first game, but he impressed me in this game.
Well, and Bruce with a sack as well.
First and 10 at their own 20. There's a shotgun snap to Rodgers. Steps up in the pocket. He gets wrapped up. He goes down. Bruce Irvin off the corner, the right side of the Seahawks defense, like a shot for the first sack of the night and a loss of 7 yards.
I felt like the pass rush was overall really good. I think I heard Pete say that they knocked Aaron off of his spot on at least 15 different dropbacks. Mm-hmm. So that's getting quite a bit of pressure. Now, it sure I can't remember how many times I was like, oh, we got, oh, are you serious? Like, and he got out of it somehow. He would duck and slide and move. He just did a masterful job at manipulating the pocket. And most quarterbacks can't do that. So I look at that pass rush and say to myself, they looked really good. And I felt like they were doing a heck of a job getting pressure. And I know some people felt like we should get a little more pressure off of their right tackle, considering it was their backup. But like you said, Avril had, 9 quarterback pressures? That's a lot. And so they were getting the pressure there. It's just they couldn't seem to get it all together at once. The pressure would come off the edges, and there'd be a little room up the middle. They get some pressure up the middle, and then there'd be room out on the edges, and Aaron was able to escape.
Yeah, overall, so, they had 18 pressures on Aaron Rodgers. So, 9 of those were Averill's, and they only blitz Rodgers twice this game. Only twice.
Right.
And that was
– which is
– you don't want to blitz that guy because he knows how to beat you. But again – in the plays he was under pressure, he had a better quarterback rating under pressure than with no pressure, which, when he has the opportunity to move around and make things happen, he can make big plays. Or the reason why his quarterback rating's high, because he's just kind of dumping it off to a guy that's left wide open in the short part of the field.
That's very true. And I don't know about you, I felt a little frustrated with the secondary overall. I felt like you were just like, gosh, oh, we just gave up another one. But honestly, when you think about the way the pass rush was working, and yes, they were getting to Aaron. He just was able to run around. And now this is the same thing, but opponents have to deal with us when Russell Wilson's out there. He starts running around and covering a guy 4, 5, 8 seconds. Good luck in this league covering a receiver for that long, especially with a guy like Aaron Rodgers who can rip it all over the field on the run, going to his left, right. Doesn't make any difference. Don't make no, never mind. He'll carve you up any which way. So I'm trying to give the D a little bit of a pass in the secondary just because I think they were in a difficult situation against the league's best quarterback. Sherman kind of had a rough game. I was disappointed in Sherman's game.
Sherman had a rough game. I thought Earl had a rough game. And Bobby Wagner had a rough game too, man. And those are the guys that...
in some areas.
Those are the guys you want to show up. Those are the guys you expect to be there and making plays.
I thought Wagner played a great game in the aspect of covering the backs out of the backfield.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times Aaron Rodgers dumped it off, and Wagner was, boom, right there with a great tackle. His tackling was good.
He had 2 missed tackles, and one of them was pretty critical as far as where on the Packers' final touchdown drive, Cobb caught a pass, and Wagner – well, no, that was Earl. Earl should have had that – should have had Cobb.
That's who I was thinking of.
And yep. And –
yeah, he whipped huge there.
But there, I'm thinking of another tackle, too, of Wagner, where a missed tackle by him ended up hurting him bad, too. So 9 sure. missed tackles for the whole team, that's a high number for me.
Yeah, it's better than last week. But again, like I said last week, I think that does have something to do with the fact that they're not able to hit during the offseason. And you can only practice tackling by tackling. And You've seen this team struggle tackling out of the gate a few years in a row, which leads me to a question that was brought up on the Facebook page, and I wish I had written down the listener's name that had written it in, because it was a good question. And the defensive struggles, do we maybe miss Dan Quinn a little more than we realize, and that some of these problems are more about Dan Quinn moving on to Atlanta than, say, you know, Cam being out? Because I hear all this, well, just pay Cam now and bring him in. We're 0-2. We have to have him. Cam's just one guy. You know what I mean? Like, he's just one player. He can't fix everything. So I think maybe more of the struggles have to do with Dan Quinn being replaced by Chris Richard.
That was Austin Mitchell that put in that comment on the Facebook page.
Oh, nice.
And yeah. It's not just Dan Quinn, though. I mean, it's also Ken Norton Jr., your linebackers coach, going to Oakland.
Right.
And when you have guys that were so integral to the identity of this defense and, you know, really, really solid coaches, losing guys like that are going to have an impact. But I have faith that Chris Richard's going to be, you know, he's going to get in place and be able to make his mark on this defense. Michael Barrow, the linebackers coach, you know, he was a former player. And as we've talked about before, with Pete Carroll being a defensive coach, I think the philosophy and how this defense plays really isn't going to change as long as Pete Carroll's still the coach.
Sure, you would think so. Now, one thing that was interesting is you mentioned they didn't blitz at all in this game, yet they blitzed a lot against the Rams. So it's going to be interesting to see going forward, what is Chris Richard's DNA when it comes to him being a defensive coordinator? Is he a blitz-happy guy? Is he a guy that's like that Belichick was for years and years and years, where they're doing something different every single week? That's hard to believe, because I feel like the last few years, the Hawks come out and they say, we play cover three and safety over the top, and that's it. Yeah. Good luck. Beat it.
I would like to see it be situational. And to the sense that if a quarterback's really not that good at handling a blitz, like coming up against the Bears, I would have to think that Jimmy Clausen is a guy that you would want to put some pressure on and blitz.
Yes. Yes. And really, if they just put the same kind of pressure they did with the front four against Aaron Rodgers against Jimmy Clausen, you're going to be in good shape. And also, this will be the first game that they actually have the advantage of you, the 12th man, to help them get off the ball a little quicker, to make communication for the offense that much more difficult. The clink is a big deal. And so that should help out with that quite a bit.
And that's part of the problem I see with the question came up from, let's see, it was on Twitter. And I'm
on the Twitter.
We got
the Twitterverse.
A question from Nate Smith just asking how long it's been since the Seahawks had started 0-2. And the answer to that is that it hasn't been that long. 2011 started
Jim
off.
Jim Moore year?
In the Pete Carroll era. Started off with a loss at San Francisco and then a loss at Pittsburgh. Now, Tavares Jackson was your starting quarterback. That team went 2-6, only won two games out of eight in that first half, finished 5-3 in the second half, again, coming on strong in the second half of the season. And that was with Tavares Jackson hurt through many of those games with the torn pectoral muscle. They finished 7-9. They were 7-7 with the last two losses, close losses to division opponents at the end of the season. So they could have easily been 7-9 and been kind of right in that playoff race. But losing to the division opponents right there at the end of the season to finish 7-9. But I also want to take fans back to the 2005 Super Bowl season, where this team...
That was a good season.
It was a good season. I enjoyed that season. Not so happy with, but pretty good season. 13-3 record. Yeah. That team started 2-2. They lost their first two road games. I was at that second road loss to Washington. That was in that era where it seemed like every time they went to the East Coast, they never won a game. And I think they lost to Jacksonville in the first week on the road in Jacksonville and lost in Washington. And so, yes, two East Coast games back to back. And they end up finishing the season 13-3 on the road to the Super Bowl.
Well, there you go. See, and I'm looking at the first half of the schedule here and just kind of going down the list. And obviously, 0-2 out of the gate against Rams and Packers on the road. Next week, obviously, at home against the Bears. Next week, a week after that, at home against the Lions, on the road against the Bengals, at home against the Panthers, on the road against the Niners, on the road against the Romo-less Cowboys in week 8. I could very easily see us go 5-1 over the next 6 mm-hmm. weeks and be heading into the second half of the season sitting at 5-3. That is highly, highly doable, especially considering 1, 2, 3 of the next of these games coming up over the last few here in the first half of the schedule at home. And the ones that you're on the road for at Bengals, does that really scare you?
The Bengals at home are a really good team.
Right, but that's your toughest road match at this point through the rest of the first half of the season. Then the only other road games are at San Fran. That sounds good. And then at Dallas without Romo. I mean, I'll take my chances against Brandon Whedon every single day. So, yeah, man, I see that there is a path to success going forward. Now, the big key is that you can't keep dropping too many games, not because of the fact that you can't win games later on, but because you can't fall that far behind the Cardinals, who've started out 2-0.
No, you don't want to, and you, the Cardinals just happens to be the first game of the second half of the season, so mm-hmm. 2 games against them, and I heard a really interesting statistic that that Bruce Arians, with Carson Palmer at quarterback, that team has only lost 2 games out of 17, out of their last 17. That's pretty solid. Mm-hmm. And
it's a great point with Carson Palmer, but you just saw Drew Brees go down with an injury. He may or may not play next week. He's what, an aging quarterback? You just saw Tony Romo go down this last week, aging quarterback. You see Peyton Manning can barely get out of his own way.
Yeah.
Do you think Carson Palmer is going to last you a whole nother year at this age?
We'll see.
I think it's just unlikely.
It can happen. Yeah, Tony Romo, 35 years old. He's just 361 days younger than me, so...
Exactly.
How about that?
Yeah, there you go. See,
could
and
you
I,
imagine
I,
at this I, age playing no. quarterback?
No way, man. No way. I fell down hiking yesterday, and I'm bruised like head to toe, man. Like I'm all gimping. It's not good. Like you turn 35, 36, man, and like you just can't. It takes you just an extra day to recover. Like you can't be taking hits like that. And
I get off the couch a lot more slowly than I did at 29, and you know, that's just getting off the couch. That's not after getting hit by an NFL player.
Exactly. Not running around against these 23-year-old super freaks. You know, that's just crazy. Well, let's talk a little special teams though, just so we cover all 3 phases of the game. Not the greatest game for Tyler Lockett.
Not a lot of great blocking ahead of Tyler Lockett either.
No.
I mean, you saw...
No, he had one nice return, you know, set us up, and then Sweezy, of course, gets a personal foul and kills that, so that was nice. Hauschka dongs one off the upright. That was pretty funny.
That was pretty lucky.
And what was more lucky than that was the kickoff he had that kind of dribbled down the sideline and could have easily gone out of bounds. And manage to stay in and go out the end zone just barely. That could have been a huge mistake. So, man, maybe a C for special teams this week. Not that great.
No. And that's one where you want to see a higher grade out of. But, I would like to see better blocking from the other guys on special teams. Give Tyler just a little bit of room to move around.
Sure. He's not going to break one every single game. I mean, let's have reasonable expectations.
Oh, yeah.
But
when he takes it out of the end zone... And it's not a deep kick into the end zone. I want him to at least, you know, be able to get across to the 20. I feel that that's not, you know, creating too high as an expectation.
No, not really. I guess I'm fine if it's anywhere from the 15 to the 20. I just, if you're going to take that risk, which the Seahawks have clearly told Tyler.
Take that risk.
Look, if you're 7 yards into the end zone, we don't care. I mean, you're taking every one. Because there's an opportunity for you to break one in the house. And if we got to start out at the 15 rather than the 20, whoop-de-doo-da-day. What you don't want to be is like at the 10. You know, I mean, that makes a big difference because then the end zone, your own end zone looms large there.
Yeah,
but,
and then if you throw a bubble screen and take a 2-yard loss, and then, you know, you have to waste 2 plays just to punt it away again. So
exactly. Gosh. Oh, man.
There were a couple. As Daryl Bevel probably took more heat than he deserved to, but there were a couple play calls in there where you go, oh, man, really?
The bubble screen's the worst one to me, but I didn't really see anything else where I was like, oh, that was awful.
Yeah, there was one play where I think they were at 3rd and 3, and they went way down the field to curse, and he was covered, threw it up to give him a chance to make a play, when really you only need 3 yards.
That's true, but is that on Daryl Bevel or is that on Russell?
That's part of the question that I had. Is it play call or play execution? Because Daryl Bevel can't make the decision to throw the ball to Jimmy Grant or can't make Russell throw the ball to the short guy, three, 5 yards down the field. Russell has to make that decision of whether or not to go short or to go deep. That's his decision.
Right, exactly. So in that circumstance, I'd have to try to look at the routes a little more closely and see if there was even another option. Because say all that short stuff was covered up underneath because the Packers know that that's what's coming in that situation, then sure, okay, then you've got your one-on-one coverage on the outside, and that's when you take those shots. So, and that's part of Russell's game. That's something that he does. How many times have you seen him just chuck it up to Jermaine Kearse and have it work out rather well, to be honest.
Yeah, and it has in the past. But then there's times that it doesn't. Kearse is kind of that. He needs that pressure, I think.
Well, that's about everything I had on the Packers game. A bummer of a loss, not an unexpected loss, and a tough road game. And it's going to be fine coming home to the Clink next week.
Yeah, no, I'm ready for a home game. I am ready for a home game.
Yeah, I think we all are.
Let's talk about this game coming up against the Bears, Adam, because one of the things we saw this last week, we saw Jay Cutler go out with injury. I'm not sure if we're going to see Cutler or if we're going to see Clausen. It didn't sound like the injury to Cutler was all that severe.
I saw a report today saying he's out 2 weeks.
Really? Okay.
Most likely Jimmy Pickle Clausen. So we'll see. We'll see how that works. Hey, Clausen's been a dumpster fire everywhere he's played, whether it's been in Carolina or with Chicago. That's a guy who flat can't get a gun. And especially, I don't know, I haven't seen a definitive report on Alshon Jeffrey yet, their talented receiver, if he's going to play. So would take away a weapon that Clausen would have. So if it's Clausen in there, a quarterback, I think we all know it's just all Matt Forte. And you just, if it's all Matt Loud, then all you have to do is just key in on him, which, you know, that's not the easiest thing in the world to do. I mean, he's a very dynamic guy. He's probably the closest thing to Marshall Faulk since Marshall Faulk, a guy who can receive the ball extremely well and run the ball pretty well, very versatile and a big part of their offense. But if that's all you have to concentrate on, boy, I like the matchup. I really do.
If it were another quarterback who maybe was really good at delivering short passes to a guy like Matt Forte, then maybe there would be a little bit more concern because that might be, you know, if you give him time, ultimately that he's going to check down to Forte, and that's a guy who can do some damage. But with Clausen, if he's going to be the guy that's in there and coming in to CenturyLink to a crowd that's going to be fired up for the first home game of the season, I like the matchup for the first. You know, it's kind of like on the homecoming game, you know, for high school. You kind of you schedule, you know, that team that you know you're going to get
that
for
cupcake.
That homecoming win. Schedule worked out okay, considering with the injury to Cutler and some of the other things the Bears have going on, especially on defense too. But still, I mean, you got John Fox as the head coach now. It's they're in the coaching department.
Great.
You feel like the Bears have upgraded in the offseason.
Do you really?
An upgrade over what they had.
Seriously?
John Fox is a pretty good regular season coach. I wouldn't want him in the postseason, but
John Fox is not a good coach. John Fox is not a good coach. That's a guy, he's flat as a pancake. Like there's no emotion to him at all. He does not rally a team well. I look at, he had some success in Carolina, but everything in Denver, that goes to Coach Manning. That has nothing to do with John Fox.
Adam Gase is a good offensive coordinator, or considered to be one.
I guess. He did win a playoff game with Tebow, so give him some credit there. That's something to be said there.
You think the Bears are getting Tebow on the phone with Clausen as their backup quarterback?
I can't believe the Eagles aren't getting Tebow on the phone at this point. But as far as the coaching, I believe that we have the leg up there. Bears defense, pretty porous last year. You're kind of seeing the same results this year. Really, their biggest threat being an aging Jared Allen.
They
now, one thing I want to see
the Cardinals, that defense.
Yeah, and I really want to see the biggest matchup I'm looking forward to is Martellus Bennett into block on his brother, Michael Bennett. I want to see some Bennett on Bennett football action. I want to see what goes down there.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it must have been like growing up in the Bennett household with those two guys. Talk about a couple of the biggest characters in the NFL. I can't wait to see the post-game press conference comments from either of those two.
Yeah, who knows, man? Who knows where that's going to go? But you know that doesn't come from just them. You know one of those parents, one of the Bennett parents, is a wild card themselves. So I'm sure that was an interesting dinner table. But again, I guess we could try to go in depth on the Chicago game, but to be honest, there's really not one spot on the field that I feel like the Bears have a significant advantage. And if there was ever a team to get right against, it's this team without their starting quarterback in the clink. I'm not going to say must win, but you better win.
Yeah, their corners don't scare me. Entrell Roll at free safety is okay. Pernell McPhee had a good game against the Arizona Cardinals this last week, the outside linebacker. Jared Allen, he's kind of old. He had an interception, though. Did you see his pick against Carson Palmer?
Yeah, that was pretty impressive.
He batted
that
it
was
up
pretty
in
impressive.
The air and ended up coming down with it. That was a good look at old Jared Allen. He still has
there
a few plays like that in him.
Well, look, as long as the Seahawks don't turn the ball over by throwing picks to Jared Allen or something stupid like that, and don't beat themselves with penalties, and not an exorbitant amount of penalties, then they're going to be just fine. I guess the only other thing you kind of look at is special teams, and I really like the idea of Lockett versus Mariani,
yeah.
The ex-University University of Montana kid. So that'll be interesting to see who has the better day returning the ball. I would say go Grizz, but Mariani needs to fail this week. I'd like that.
Man, if our corners can't get right against this receiving group, Alshon Jeffrey he's pretty good. So if he's in the game, that does give them someone. But apart from Jeffrey, man, they are not very strong at receiver.
Now, Eddie Royal, it's the Eddie Royals of the world, things like that. Just league replacement guys. One thing I thought the Hawks did well this last week, at least was an improvement, was slot receiver coverage between Burley or Shedd. And interesting to see Shedd get the start. We'll see who they decide to start against the Bears. It sounded like that was a little situational in Pete's mind. If it's more of a pass-happy team, they're going Shedd. If it's more of a run-heavy team, they're going to start Deion Bailey. I would guess that with Cutler out and Forte obviously going to be the focus of the offense, that maybe you go
maybe
Bailey?
We'll see Bailey.
I don't know.
I would like to see him given an opportunity for redemption. I like Shedd as the strong safety, especially in passing situations, because he does have that versatility to play corner or safety, and so to have a guy like that who's versatile on the field to where you can almost switch from, change how your defense is just with the personnel that you have on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Bailey in there as a run stopper, I could see him getting the start this week. And with the fired up crowd, I'd like to see him out there get a little bit of redemption from that Rams game.
Yeah, I agree. And I find it interesting that neither one of us has asked the question, do we see Cam this week?
Well,
I think everybody, all 12s have pretty much said, all right, be that way then. Like, really, you're going to sit out two games now? Fine. Be that way. Go sit at home and sulk. I'm done with you. I feel like that's how most fans feel now. And I am just blown away at how much goodwill he's blown in an offseason. I don't know that I've seen that without committing a crime. I mean? Like, without doing something that reprehensible. But just by his actions with this contract dispute, man, he just set it ablaze.
I have a little bit to get to in my do better. I feel like I have to come to his defense a little bit. But at the same side, I appreciate the position of people just simply saying, I'm done with you and getting over it versus some of the other things that I'm seeing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right. Yeah, we can talk about that more later on. So one thing that I do like, and something we haven't talked about, is Paul Allen getting involved a little bit. in the sense of, all right, fine, we're not talking to you anymore. I'm pulling the plug on this.
Yeah.
And for a guy who's generally hands off to only come through when it comes time to really, because one thing, it takes some of the heat off of Schneider.
Sure.
And I think that's a really good move by Paul Allen there, because nobody can question him. It's his money. He doesn't want to pay the man. He doesn't want to pay the guy. I also like that he's coming out in a strong stance in one of the few times that he's needed to put himself out there in front.
All right. Well, what do you say we get on to some email and some do better and better at life, Adam?
I dig it. Sounds good, man.
Welcome back to the Seahawkers podcast. Hey, we want to hear from those of you who are listening.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to reach out to us via email, you can email us at gohawks@seahawkerspodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter @SeahawkersPod, or you can hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/SeahawkersPodcast.
You can call in too.
Yeah, 253-235-9041. One other thing I want to throw out that we haven't talked about in a while is that if you listen to this podcast on the web, or you need another way, maybe you don't want to download a podcast app, we have a dedicated podcast app for your phone.
Yeah.
If you're an Android user, if you're an iPhone user, just search in your app store, whether it's Amazon App Store or the Android or iPhone, just search Seahawkers Podcast, and you can pick up the app. You can get the podcast right there and get the notifications when new episodes. And I think you can just even provide feedback right through those apps.
You sure can. You had a lot of cool links built into that. It's actually really convenient. I, being kind of technically not the greatest with technology, I found it to be very helpful, the app. It's pretty neat. And then also, be sure to rate the apps so that people can find them a little more easily, and rate the show, whether that's on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn.
Wherever you find it.
Wherever you find it, rate the show. It's good for everybody.
It's really helping us move up in the rankings, too. I see us moving up in the iTunes review or in the mm-hmm. iTunes rankings.
Yeah.
So people are getting out there, getting after it. I like it a lot.
I do, too.
All right. Well, let's say we get to some email. Well, I'll start with a tweet. We got one from @aloafofbrad. I'm definitely not giving up on the season and definitely not on this team, but each loss we experience leads me to think more and more about how critical the Super Bowl interception really was. Now that I'm done being negative, I would absolutely be shocked if Seattle wasn't 6-2 heading into our first matchup with the Cardinals. This isn't even almost over. And it brings up an interesting question, Adam. I think if we're looking at turning points, I'd almost point back to the NFC Championship game to be down to a point where this team was literally to have 0.1% of a chance at winning a game.
Mm-hmm.
And everything breaks the right way for you. And all the critical moments, it almost makes me think that what if this team, because I'm concerned about this defense losing games in the fourth quarter. And we've seen that happen 3 times in a row now.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me go back to that game and wonder if those guys just think it's going to work out.
Well, I think I would put it in these terms. Early on in my life, when I was 19, 20, 21, 22, everything just worked out. You know right. what I mean? Like, you know, I got married, bought a house, started a business, graduated college. You know what I mean? Like, everything was just working out until it didn't. And then it all went down the tubes, and by the time I was 27, like, everything was in the dumps. It was awful, like, the whole thing. I think things do have a way of evening themselves out, but I do think that belief in that things are always going to work out, I think, is essential. And there was a point where I lost that belief, and it definitely contributed to the problem. It made it worse. So keep that belief that everything's going to work out. But I do have a problem with everybody linking back to the Super Bowl game. Like you just said, this is 3 games in a row that we've seen the defense give up leads. No, I haven't. This is 2 games in a row. That was last season. That first one you're trying to lump in there was last season. Different players, different coaches, different season. You can't lump it together. And I think me as...
I can lump it together, and I just did.
And it makes you wrong on the inside, which which makes me sad for you. And that's just the thing is I want... The thing is, this isn't me saying that. This is the team. This is the players. If you're an athlete and you, this is the way that you're moving forward after that, that's the way you compartmentalize this. And great athletes are able to do that. Take, you know, the past and put it in the past, and take the present and put it in the present. And so I refuse to try to link together struggles from last year to the struggles to this year as far as the Super Bowl having an effect on this year. I think it's overblown.
Okay, well, they've had two times more of the struggles with this team in the fourth quarter than last year with that team in the fourth quarter in the playoffs. So
okay,
there you go.
All right, well, hey,
I don't have to like it. I don't have to like these fourth quarter losses, Adam.
Well, I'm not saying I'm a fan.
Has a lead,
yeah,
they should keep it.
Yeah, they should get better at that.
Yeah. Got an email from Dan Kaava, which is, he says, is Hawaiian, and I appreciate that he gave the pronunciation there. So,
oh, nice.
Pronunciation. See, I have to be able to pronounce pronunciation correctly even.
Mm-hmm.
Just got done listening to your pre-Packers podcast. Great job. But now I blame Adam for the loss of the Rams last week. I can't believe he didn't wear his hat.
Yeah.
We have crazy hot weather here in Hawaii this year. Yeah, I know, boohoo, but global warming is a...
it's everywhere. It's global, turns out. Yeah.
When you live in a warm place already. He said, I was sweating my ass off in this Richard Sherman jersey all the way through to the unfortunate outcome of the game. After the failure to convert the fourth down, I threw it off and watched the rest of the game shirtless, as a man should be, for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
You can bet that I'll be wearing my jersey again when the Hawks take over Lambeau on Sunday, and he better have his hat on too. Do better, man.
Look, I will take the criticism, because you're right and I was wrong. I'm sorry for not wearing the hat. It was my fault. That was bad. Now, you know, my defense, I did wear it this week.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Dan. What Adam is not going to tell you is that last week on the show, I talked about this letter of agreement for conditions of football viewing.
No, I did this too.
And specifically on one of these rules, I'll go ahead and read it again, Adam, because maybe you missed this one.
Yeah.
No. At no time are you allowed to state that you think the Seahawks are going to win this game, ever. Ever is in bold and in all capital letters, Adam.
Yeah.
And you, right before the interception, my friend, told me that you thought the Seahawks are going to win this game.
I did. I thought we were going to come back. And I said it out of a place of confidence. And, well, it's my fault. So,
and you know what? Maybe that's why the officials called the ball for Green Bay and not for Justin Britt when he came out of that pile.
Right. I still can't understand that. How can somebody, the other team, possess the ball when our guy physically has the football? Like, in his hands, away from the other guy.
Clearly fumbled it.
Yeah. But
he clearly fumbled it watching the replay.
Oh, yeah.
How
that's
does our guy coming out of the pile with the ball not count as recovering a fumble?
Hard telling out, Noah, man. That's one I will never understand.
Yeah. Coach Pete didn't seem to have a very good answer, or wasn't satisfied with the answer that he got either.
Nope.
You don't see him too fired up about officials and penalties.
Nope.
Although this game, he was in the officials' ear a lot.
Right. Although, I will say this. As far as coming out on the wrong side of a penalty or two to the Packers, we're probably due for a call to go against us when it comes to the Packers. Probably do.
No, I heard Jim Rome made that point about Carroll complaining about Britt coming up with the football and pointed back to the infamous play where Golden Tate caught the ball.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that. I'm just saying.
Yeah, makeup call 2 years later.
Yes, exactly. It just all evens out, man.
Here's one from Michael in San Diego. I never played football at any level and have merely been a fan. Mm-hmm. With the recent uninspired offensive play we've seen and the criticism being directed at Daryl Bevel, would you mind explaining what the role of the offensive coordinator versus the head coach is during the game? Does the offensive coordinator call all the plays on his own? If so, what does the head coach do? Does the head coach approve the plays and retain the right to change them? Just looking for some insight into what happens on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that the coaching staff meets during the week to discuss the appropriate plan for the game, but in-game situation moves need to be made quickly, so I'm just trying to understand the dynamics of what's really going on the sidelines regarding play calling and the like. Thanks, from Michael in San Diego.
Well, thanks for the email, Michael. It's interesting. I think that relationship between offensive coordinator and head coach and what the responsibilities are different for every single team, depending on how much responsibility that the head coach likes to take in play calling or as much as he likes to delegate. I think in the position of Daryl Bevel, he pretty much calls all the plays. I think really the head coach in that role, being Pete, is more on situational football ideas, as in, all right, we're down to a minute 20 left in the game, or 3 minutes left in the game, and we're up three and we have the ball. I would like to see us run the ball a heck of a lot more than we throw the ball here to run out the clock. That's what, that's the mandate he then gives Daryl Bevel, and then Daryl Bevel calls the specifics to get that done. And I think that's kind of more the idea. When it comes down to a situational decision, Pete's going to say, hey, yes, we're going to go for it on fourth down, and then Daryl Bevel, you come up with the play call. Yeah, sure. Things like that. That's how I feel like that dynamic works.
Yeah, or if they do want to go for it on fourth down, he may say, I want to pass or I want to run.
Right.
And then give Bevel the leeway as to which play he might have in mind for that particular situation.
Exactly.
The only other thing that I would really add is that one of the things we heard coming out of this game was they were very run-heavy in that first half.
Mm-hmm.
And at halftime, it was Coach Carroll's decision to make that adjustment to go more pass-heavy in the third quarter. And like you said, it's more of just an overall philosophical of this is the direction I want to see you change and adjust in the second half. And so he gives that kind of direction.
Right, right.
But like you said, with other teams and maybe more offensive-minded head coach, Mike McCarthy for the Packers mm-hmm. was one of those guys where he was the offensive coordinator and head coach. He called all the plays.
For years,
and you saw on the graphic when their current – He wasn't called the offensive coordinator for the Packers. He was the associate head coach
right.
for the offense,
right.
calling the plays. So right. Just interesting how other teams might handle that.
Exactly, exactly.
Here's one from Matthew in New Jersey. First of all, let me say I've only been listening for a couple of months, but I am addicted. You guys are great. Living in New Jersey and being the only 12 I know has been discouraging, especially after, well, you know. And having you guys week to week has not only expanded my knowledge of the team, but my fandom as well. I started watching football only a few years ago and fell head over heels for the Seahawks in week two of the 2013 season.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the team I began to follow wins the Super Bowl, and I'm labeled as a front runner. But hey, I followed them through the loss last year, and I've been optimistic since. That being said, after this week two loss of Green Bay, I am bleeping furious with some of these play calls. Why are we giving Marshawn the ball three straight downs in a row knowing the faults on our O-line? I get it. We threw a pick on the last play of the Super Bowl. I get it. We have Marshawn Lynch, the best running back in the league. I get it. We're known for our run game, but come on. Let's stop trying to be the team people think we're supposed to be, and let's be the team we are meant to be. We've got Jimmy freaking Graham. Where's a deep pass to Lockett? Heck, I'll take some more one-handed catches from Luke Wilson.
Yeah,
I think Russell Wilson showcased his passing abilities, rushing abilities pretty well in the third quarter. Get those weapons out there a little more. Know your faults and embrace your talents. And don't get me started on Cam Chancellor. If he's not back after the 0-2 start, I'm officially done with him. How can someone stand by and watch his brothers fail like that? It's selfish, and he needs to do better. Thankfully, we're playing the Bears at home, and this should be a good chance to learn a little more about who we are as a team and turn this thing around and go to our third straight Super Bowl. If not, I'm going to break up with my girlfriend, quit my job, and move into the woods of Washington State where I'll cover myself with the 12's flag and wait for the earth to reclaim me. Thanks.
Hey, look, that's a reasonable reaction. If they do lose, I get it. I would suggest retreating to the sticks of Montana rather than Washington. It's just nicer.
Less rain.
Yeah, less rain. And a little more open space. Now, as far as just recently becoming a fan and just recently finding the show, thanks for listening and tuning in. One thing we've said in the past is we don't give a crap when you became a Seahawks fan. You can't be labeled a bandwagoner until you stop being a Seahawks fan at that point. If you ever jump off, then you're a bandwagoner. If you're on too thick and thin, then you're fine, man. So obviously, sticking through the loss this last year, you're still a real fan. And we covered a little bit about the offensive stuff earlier in the pod, so I think you kind of have a sense of our thoughts on that. And appreciate the email, man.
Yeah, I like the idea of embracing your talents, and especially if you get into a few games and you realize where your talents may not be where they think they are, making the adjustments to fix that, I think, will be key. But like you said, these next two games, they're going to give us an idea of, mm-hmm. of where this team really at, really is at, especially at home. Yeah. Well, I can't get to all the other email, and unfortunately can't get to the call here because we do we're a little bit short on time, and we need to get to do better and better at life, Adam.
Yeah, we do. We do. You know, I mean, maybe we can get some of those emails and calls in later in the week on something, or just who knows? Well, maybe we'll figure something out because you guys did great. You did great with that. All right, so do better. Why don't you go first?
Okay. Well, I've got to say, Adam, that the news has been a little bit frustrating to me. We haven't talked about this yet, but Mike Silver was reporting that he thought Jimmy Graham clearly wasn't thrilled, quotes, clearly wasn't thrilled with how he was used in the offense just by the fact that he was declining to answer questions. Mm-hmm. And so now how Silver felt about Graham is then reported as Graham not being thrilled with his role in the Seahawks offense. And Carroll gets a question about it. And Carroll says something to the fact, well, I'm sure he's not happy because, you know, he didn't get the ball very much. And I could see why he could be, discouraged, I think was the mm-hmm. word that mm-hmm. word that Carroll used. But they're just going off of thoughts that, that they think, how that athlete, nobody's actually heard from Graham how he felt after this last game, but I don't know. I know it may be because it feels true. That's where the media goes and they run with it. But Adam, that's not where my do better is.
No, because that should be. I mean, if we don't know what he thinks, let's make it up for him by all freaking means.
No. That's just one thing that's been bothering me.
Okay.
Coming out of this game. But no, my do better this week is actually in defense of Cam Chancellor. I have to say, I'm sick of his actions being referred to as childish.
Yeah.
To be willing to sit out and willing to pass up the money that he was due to earn is, to me, is a very adult decision.
Well, it takes the cojones.
As childish.
Yeah, it takes
now,
the cojones.
I may not agree with the decision. I definitely rather have him on the team, but just as I can accept the decision by the Seahawks not to cave in and renegotiate his deal, I can accept Cam's stance. I'm not gonna act like a little kid though and go online and cry about the fact that my friend Bam Bam doesn't want to come out and play with us. Why do I not do that? Because I'm an adult. I may not agree with it or like it, but I can understand mm-hmm. why he feels like he should be paid more. And yes, he has a contract, and if he decides to come back, he'll continue to be paid the negotiated amount in his contract, and he's been willing to accept the consequences in his contract for not being there. So to me, it's not a contract issue. And maybe I'm not really defending Cam in this case. I'm sick of the whining, Adam. I'm sick of the whining.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, I mean, we don't know what Cam's thinking, so again, let's just make it up for him at this point. But no, you're 100% right. I love the people that come out and bicker around on the comments and all these different articles calling Cam childish. What is going on in the comment section of every other article and calling a guy names from, you know, being a keyboard warrior and, you know, launching all that criticism at another human being from the safety of your desk? What's more childish than that? It's a pot calling the kettle black. I mean, it's really ridiculous, and it does get old. Now, we come on the show and we talk about Cam's situation, how it's affecting the team, and how we think things should change. But I don't think either one of us has been sitting here calling him names.
No.
You know, I mean, there's just a line there,
right?
You know,
yeah. Internet whining is not going to bring Cam back, right? I mean, we know this. I watched a couple of years back, Adam, as half the town of Cleveland got together and recorded that song, you know, please stay, LeBron, we really need you. And he left for Miami anyway. I was embarrassed for the people of Cleveland who made that video. And I have to say, I'm a little bit embarrassed about the people who go online and set up GoFundMes. Not a real solution, by the way, or a GoFundMe to break up Russell Wilson and Ciara. I know you want this team to win. I know you want them to win. I do too. We have that in common. But those things aren't going to help this team win. If you want to put your money toward helping this team win, go online, buy a ticket to the Bears game on Sunday, and bring your adult voice and scream your adult brains out. That will make 10 times more the difference toward helping this team win anything than you can do to come up with doing online. So for those people out there, keyboard warriors, do better.
Absolutely, man. And really, if you want to make 100 times better use of your money in that situation to really help out the team, you can just donate it to the Seahawkers podcast. There's a donate button right on the Facebook page and on the webpage. Just, you know, just donate the money. It's
Cam,
fine.
Cam has millions in his contract. You know, we don't make that much.
Exactly. Just a thousandaire.
Just throwing that out there. Good. Thanks for putting that out there, Adam.
Yeah, you're welcome, man. You're welcome. All right. Well, my do better this week, both my do better and better at life have things to do with stuff I saw on the Monday night game, Colts Jets. And since the draft where Andrew Luck was drafted number one and Russell was drafted in the third round, and those two being the most prolific of the quarterbacks out of that draft to this point, you see all the comparisons of Andrew Luck and Russell Wilson. You hear all the time, right?
All the time.
And they always, Andrew Luck's had to do more, and Andrew Luck's more prototypical, and Andrew Luck's the better quarterback, and Russell Wilson's just inconsistent. You know what I mean? Like, it's always Andrew Luck's the greatest, Andrew Luck's the greatest, Andrew Luck's apology. Andrew Luck has turned the ball over 6 times already this year. 6 times. Yeah. That's insane. And then they put up this graphic, and this is the crux of my problem from the broadcast. And they go through the idea that he's had to go through 4 left guards and 5 centers and 6 right guards and 6 right tackles. Oh, my stars. Andrew Luck is the only quarterback that's ever had to deal with a changing crappy offensive line. He's a god amongst men. How has he done it? And you don't hear crap about how Russell Wilson has had to deal with that Swiss cheese of an offensive line over the first 3 years and 50 starts of his career. You don't hear one of these big time pundits come out and say, yeah, look what Russell's done with this makeshift line. No. It's just, he scrambles too much and he can't see over the middle. Like, that's the problem. It's not the fact he's too short, he can't see. It's not the fact that his offensive line has changed around just as much as God's gift, Andrew freaking Luck. Look, I like Andrew Luck. I think he's a good dude.
I do too.
I think he's a heck of a quarterback.
I think it's okay to be of the mind that both these quarterbacks are really good.
Really good. And it just drives me nuts that Russell Wilson is always discounted and put behind Andrew Luck every single time the discussion comes up. And every excuse is given to Andrew Luck when he turns the ball over 6 times in 2 freaking games and his team starts 0-2. And Russell Wilson has 2 fluky picks in his first 2 games and his team is 0-2. And he's played a heck of a lot better than Andrew Luck and that Colts team. That offense looks like a dumpster fire. So for every Andrew Luck apologist who does things like that stupid graphic and doesn't give Russell Wilson the credit that he deserves, do better.
Yeah. If you think our team has been bad at picking offensive linemen, that Colts team, their general manager, oh my goodness,
ouch,
they are not good at picking offensive linemen.
Ouch. I mean, we can get into this in the picks podcast, but I think the Colts would be doing themselves a disservice if they pick that GM over top of Pagano. I really do.
Well, really quick, my better at life. I know you actually had Chris Borland for your better at life, Adam, but based off of what I've been reading and the fact that, because I've had a hard time deciding why a guy like Borland would pass up an NFL paycheck and decide to retire. But, you know, talk about a thoughtful decision and just how he's approached it since retiring, because he's had a lot of opportunity to kind of be the face of a guy who would give up the NFL and because of making a statement against the threat of being concussed and you know, having CTE symptoms that we're seeing from a lot of these retired NFL players. And he hasn't taken that opportunity, and he doesn't want it. He just wants to live his life knowing that maybe he just made the decision at the right time, because there's still 10 years of football that happened before his 1 year in pro sports. And talking about him, think about, you know, how he only had 2 diagnosed concussions, but when he really broke down, you know, based off of the symptoms, that he thought he had maybe around 30 concussions. It makes you understand what these players go through. And he's talked about, too, one of his fellow linebackers that came to try out for the Seahawks, and his name escapes me. But just what some of these guys go through week to week just to try and get on the field. And that's the, go back and look for the article that the ESPN did probably, I think it was around August 20th, 21st. And it's a really long piece, so I don't want to get into all of it here. But just to get a sense for what some of the players go through, even in college, week to week, to try and get on the field, it's incredible. And it makes me think about just how it's really helped me understand the decision Chris Borland made and why he made it. And so despite you giving him the Better at Life nod too, I am giving him my Better at Life nod this week. Better at Life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah, when he did come out with the decision, he was my Better at Life that week. And I like that he hasn't made a spectacle
and that's
of himself.
Really, that's my point, yeah. Right. That he's gone through the offseason and he's really made that concerted effort to not make a spectacle. That concussion movie with Will Smith is coming out, and they said mm-hmm. they offered him money to kind of be a face of promoting that movie, and he turned it down. He said he didn't want to be a part of it because he wants it to be his decision. He doesn't want to force his decision and make it seem like, oh, I'm better than everybody else because I was able to make this decision. No, this is just my decision, and that's I educated myself,
and
that's it. That's as far as it goes. It's my decision, yeah. And I made it.
I totally agree. Well, my Better at Life is for whoever at ESPN and the NFL listens to this show because Brandon, we had talked about this months and months ago, something that needed to change in the NFL that would make a huge difference. And I saw it in the Monday night game, and I hadn't seen it before. Pylon cams. They put cameras in the pylons, finally. And not only that, they took it a step further than what we had suggested, just being able to look down the goal line, but also up the sideline, and then also a camera out the very tip top of it. And there was three or four different instances where it wasn't a game deciding situation, but it was a cool shot. And I just was really appreciative to ESPN for being a trendsetter that way. They took nanny cams. They put them in the pylons, just like we said. It's worked out perfectly. I think it's really cool. So, executive at ESPN, you are better at life than Skip Bayless.
Just essentially anyone who listens to our show and decides to take action upon suggestions that we make. All those people
right,
are better
exactly.
at life than Skip Bayless.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because we're right.
All right. Well, that's a really good note to end the show on this week, Adam.
I agree.
So with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
The drive to go further and reach higher. The same thing that inspires you inspires us. At Strayer University, we're always searching for new ways to make education more affordable. That's why we offer access to up to 10 no-cost gen ed courses to help you save time and money so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. No-cost gen eds provided by Strayer University affiliate Sophia Learning. Eligibility rules apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.